You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we're talking about the different ways to learn how to code. We've asked our friend Aaron Orstrom to join us in our discussion. Aaron is a recent graduate of Nashville Software School and just started her first job as a developer. She's active in the development community here in Nashville, even attending some of the same events as us, and we met her through the Code Newbie Nashville group. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
I've been doing a lot of project management over the last week or so. Project management, little bits of tactical code, but like over the last week, there's probably been maybe 8 hours of actual coding. The rest of it's been meetings and managing and learning new systems and that sort of stuff. I mean, it's very different for me. I do get to actually sling some Delphi code tomorrow, though.
Nice.
Because I managed to get in the bug tracker and find something nobody else wanted. So, I guess Aaron's next.
Yeah, so since it's the beginning of the week, I haven't really been fighting too much, but this would be the beginning of the fifth week at my first position as a developer with the STS department with the state. And so far, it's just been a lot of meetings, a few conference calls. We unfortunately haven't actually written a line of code outside of a tutorial yet because it's like this whole process of getting these 90 to 96 applications transferred over to our newly formed dev team to finally be able to work on those, because the third party vendors that we're using for all the app development, their contract ends at the end of March, and so our team is being created and these apps are slowly getting transitioned over to us so that we can take over the development of these apps that are with the different departments within the state.
Sounds like you're about to be busy.
Yes. It's like the eye before the storm. It's like calm, strangely calm some days, and then other days it's a lot of meetings with the different departments to learn names and put names with faces and just know that who we'll be interacting with and who will be interacting with us when we actually do get to work on these apps. But it's coming real soon. The mic's gonna drop.
Yeah. Something's gonna drop.
Yeah.
So supposedly our development environment just got stood up on Friday, and then this week actually begins the training and the start of the transition of the apps. So
were you one of the first people hired onto the team?
Yes. Me and one other were extended offers on the same day, and we were the first two to start. And then we have one more that started, I believe, a week or two after we did. And then we've got a fourth starting on Thursday, another starting in a couple of weeks, and then five more after that. So the goal is to be a team of 16, 10 developers, and then one guy is going to be like our architect, and then we're going to have a UX, UI person, a communications person, and then a couple of other positions that aren't strictly dev positions.
Well, that's really cool.
But we're still forming the team. Like, you know, they're still interviewing and sending out offers.
When I started, the team was already there, and I was just being brought on.
Yep.
So it was a little bit different experience.
We're on the ground floor. We're starting from the ground up, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
That kind of experience. What about you, Beej?
Well, speaking of work, I am now a certified Scrum Master.
All hail Scrum Lord Beej.
Scrum Master Beej.
Scrum Lord. I like the term Scrum Lord. Yeah.
Scrum Master sounds like a DJ name.
Yeah.
We did an episode on Scrum a little while back, and I named it Scrum Lord.
Yeah, you did. I haven't listened to it yet, but I've seen the title.
And I took the course last week. Not bad, but I do feel like it could have been taught in one day instead of two. Had it been a med school class, it would have been taught in 15 minutes based on the amount of material.
Yeah. You have a different set of expectations going in.
Well, our current Scrum Master for the team I'm on came up and asked me what I thought of the course. I said, well, you really should ask someone else, because my opinion of courses is skewed from having gone to med school. It's like, but it wasn't bad. I'm still settling into my new place. Going to be looking for new furniture in the next few weeks. Right now, I just moved the last stuff out of my parents' basement. And so my living room is covered in boxes, most of which have books. Some have other things, but they're pretty much all books.
Yeah.
In addition to furniture, you're going to need to look for some cookware.
Yes, that's true. I was telling you about that earlier. Yeah, I found out that I no longer have any pots or pans.
I might have a few spares, but
that would be nice.
Yeah. We can go look. I need to clean my basement out anyway.
Yeah. Let's see. I have a pressure cooker and a crock pot, and that's it. You know, and actually, I have been learning a few things at work. Have either of you guys ever used the Elvis operator in C Sharp?
Yep.
No.
After you messaged me about it.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's
null propagating.
Yeah, null propagating. So if you're like checking a null on a child element, you have parent.child doesn't equal null, do this, else return null. Well, instead of all of that, you can just write parent.child ?whatever function you want to run on it, and it does the null check for you. As my boss says, it is syntax sugar.
Yeah.
Which I think we should do an episode on syntax sugar.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, if you look at the IL code, it does, you know, it does do the check under the hood.
Yeah, it does it, but it's just so far as...
Because I'm that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, let's compile this and let's basically disassemble it and see what it actually does.
Sounds like a ternary operator.
Yeah.
Or something. It's not
even exactly the same thing, but like the syntactic sugar
kind of
thing.
Or the coalescence operator, mm-hmm. or any of those. I mean, they've tried to make it cleaner for, you know, a lot of functional programming constructs.
Yeah. It's just, it's really nice. And that, and I've been doing some extension methods.
Oh, yeah.
Which, oh my goodness. I spent about 20 minutes refactoring a converter service that we have. And now it is the cleanest looking, amazing code ever. And it doesn't look like just this huge jumbled mess. It's going to save hours going into adding future features.
Be careful with those, though, because that's also a really good way to turn a dumpster fire into a bunch of trash can fires.
Yeah, I can see that. I can. But with what we're doing...
Oh, you can see it. I'll bring the code up. Because I wrote some.
Yeah. Well, with what we're doing, it's building a new product. So we can avoid that by avoiding it going in, but it's been really interesting.
Wise words.
Yeah. So I guess it's about time to roll the music.
This week for IoTs, I have a project platform. This is the Virtual Trip Runner and Real Trip Recorder. And the project started back in 2014 and is an attempt to develop an open source vehicle simulator for use by anyone needing realistic vehicle data, developing, you know, stuff that would go into a vehicle, kind of DIY IoT for vehicles. A lot of acronyms.
So for me, it would be DIY IoT for my CRV.
Yes. And it's kind of neat. You can follow along with their progress in developing the platform via a blog that will be in the show notes. And something from the website, vehicles are very complex machines incorporating multiple microcontrollers communicating via onboard buses. The level of electronic technology in vehicles has exploded, and there is a large number of vehicle data readily available on the diagnostic bus, which is used locally. Not yet used for the vast number of potential external applications. So if you're messing around with like IoT for your vehicle, this is a fun little platform to get real vehicle data in and sort of do some unit testing or user testing. Who's cool. Talking to us this week?
We grabbed a comment off of Twitter from James Tonkins. Says, just wanted to say thanks for the Code Newbie meetup last week, and I'm really enjoying the podcast.
James, thanks for the comment. We really enjoy the meetups as well. And we're really thankful to be part of the Code Newbie community. It's actually how we met Aaron, who's here with us today. We've got some Complete Developer swag just for you. And if you guys would like your very own Complete Developer swag bag, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all of our episodes to Facebook, Google+, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This week, we're going to be doing something a bit different, as each of us, Will, Aaron, and myself, all have different experiences in learning to code and learning the concepts of computer science. So we're kind of going to have a roundtable discussion about each of our experiences. Will has a degree in computer information systems, whereas Aaron and I have degrees in other fields, but ultimately came to programming as a career. So we'll start with what's going to be a bit of a review for myself and Will, as we've talked about this in other episodes, but what brought us to programming? Will, why don't you lead us off with this?
I was actually going to be a marine biologist. You know, I got published in high school in Freshwater Marine Aquarium magazine. I raised like 20 different species of fish. I was on that trajectory, and I got to playing around with, I think it was GW Basic, and then I switched to Access VBA. I was trying to get the background in for being able to manage data for experiments so that, you know, I was ahead of the game. And then I got to where I was enjoying the programming, and then I got to college and I was like, well, I'll dual major, because biologically inspired computing algorithms is something I'm very interested in. And I discovered there's a little bit of a culture clash, because all the computer people were up till 3 a.m. and all the biology people were in class at 7:40 a.m. and yes, you can't do both. And I, you know, at that point I was enjoying the computer stuff a lot more than the biology. And so I just kind of dropped that off.
Aaron, what about you? What brought you to programming?
So, I graduated at the end of 2013 from Austin Peay with a bachelor's in sociology. However, when I graduated, I figured out that that's actually not what I wanted to pursue a career in, mostly because the deeper I got into the major, the more depressing it became, because, you know, being a sociology major, you can see all the problems that are going on. It was really difficult to try and entice anyone or make anyone really like passionate about making changes. Mm-hmm. And so it was just kind of like a catch 22 in a way, where it was just like, you see it and you want to do something about it, but you can't. You know, I know they talk about the power of one, but it really takes a society to help change society's problems. Anyway, and then also you had to have at least a master's or higher to get anywhere into a decent position in that field. And so I knew when I graduated with my bachelor's, I wanted to take a break from school. I was kind of burnt out. And then I ended up working at a local English as a second language school. One of my friends from high school, his mom owned the business, and I had no idea what I wanted to do when I graduated. Just happened to be talking to him, and shot in the dark, set up an interview with his mom, and it just kind of snowballed into a job from there. I was there, I didn't teach English. I was their media and technology coordinator / administrative assistant. So it's kind of three jobs rolled up into one. Mm-hmm. I handled the school's social media pages, and their content. And then I troubleshooted the like computers and the iPods and all that kind of thing, made sure everything was maintained and ran smoothly. And then I was also just general help in the office, so, you know, helping to answer students' questions, answer phones, general filing, that kind of thing. I enjoyed it for about the first year. It kind of used my degree, like sociology, and then like I was meeting people from different cultures and from places all over the world, mm-hmm. and who spoke different languages, and so had to be socially aware of the changes in their cultures, you know, and just be sensitive to that kind of thing. And so I enjoyed it for about the first year. And then after that, it just wasn't really fulfilling anymore. And then it being a small business, there wasn't really any upward mobility. There wasn't anywhere for me to go within that business. And then I really didn't know. I thought maybe at one point I wanted to be or get a position somewhere in like international education or something of that nature, but didn't get far enough to actually figure that out. One day I was just, I think it was about a year and 4 months I've been working there, and I was looking at the school's website. It was kind of a pain point or a point of many complaints among students, teachers, the host families, like pretty much anyone whoever looked at the site. It was difficult for students to navigate, especially when English wasn't their first language. It was kind of an eyesore to look at. The color scheme was really hard on the eyes because it was like a maroon red or a ruby red and a dark blue. It was not mobile responsive, so it didn't look good even on a desktop, but it definitely didn't look good on mobile, and you had to like pinch to zoom to like see mm-hmm. anything. And anyway, it really needed some updating, but the current platform that we were using could only allow us to edit the content on the pages and didn't give us any access to the layout or, you know, colors and or anything like that. And so I turned to almighty Google and I said, you know, how do you update a website? And that led me to, I believe Codecademy was where I started, but I used some other internet resources. But I started on Codecademy and, you know, I started learning a little bit of HTML, CSS, and a little bit of JavaScript. And, you know, I did that for a couple weeks. And I was like, hey, I kind of like this. This is kind of cool. And so I then went on to Meetup randomly and was looking for code or technology-related meetups to just kind of learn more about the field in general. The first one I started at was Nashville Women Programmers, and that was actually where I met many individuals who were either current or former students at Nashville Software School, and they highly recommended the program if this was the field, you know, if this was something that I was interested in doing. So I continued going to that meetup. They met once a month. So I think I went to two or three more. I started doing some research about NSS and other, you know, coding or development boot camps. I ended up doing a 4-week intro to web development in the fall called Savvy Coders, and they were brand new. I was the first class to go through. And then around that time, when I got back from Europe at the end of August, I had applied and then interviewed, I believe, at the end of September. And then I was notified of my acceptance in a Nashville Software School in mid-October. And so then I made plans to leave the current job that I was at the end of the year to be able to start the Nashville Software School program in January. So the full-time program from January to June.
I think it's interesting that you did sociology, because I have a degree in psychology.
And that was one of my minors.
Yeah.
Psychology and health.
Mine was...
Which is funny because you were also pre-med. And
yeah. My minor was philosophy and ethics. I think it's interesting the way you were talking, because I'd heard it said that sociology looks at a culture as a whole, whereas psychology looks at a culture as individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Psychology is more like the individual and the inner workings of the brain mm-hmm. and how individuals think through things, where sociology is like the relationships between people and relationships between cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
Societies, you know, being the best word.
Psychology, like sociology, you have to have a master's to do anything with. And it was when I was in the master's program that I decided that I realized I wanted to go to med school, which I had started off college wanting to do that and went a different direction. Of course, I think everybody knows I've took programming in high school. While I was in med school, I went through some major life changes.
That's a way to put it.
Yeah, that is a way to put it. And ended up moving back to Tennessee and was hanging out with Will and he who shall not be named, even though we've named him. He still likes it.
Yeah.
But I was hanging out with them and I was like, you know, I don't know what I want to do with my life now that I'm not going to be a doctor. And they said, well, you used to be good at programming and you really enjoyed it and have the mindset for it. So they pointed me to some free resources.
I don't know what we sent you towards, to be honest.
You sent me towards several things that were like video games and coding. It was
Treehouse,
like
maybe?
It wasn't Yeah, they did send me to Treehouse, but I didn't really do anything at Treehouse. It was
we did send you to video game coding sites to try to get you hooked.
Yeah, you sent me there, and then
we were total code pushers.
Yeah, they were, and that was okay, but I wasn't that interested in it. It was when they sent me a link to very very basic console based C#, like learning just syntactic learning on the console apps, that I got hooked.
Yeah, and I think it's super interesting that you actually started with C#, whereas like everyone that I've ever talked to or, you know, instructors, whatever, like, no, you need to start with HTML and CSS and JavaScript because those are like the basis of all like web applications and that kind of thing. And like that's where most people get their basis.
I was far enough back that that wasn't a thing. Like I remember downloading this new tool for the internet called Mosaic. Like, that was the first browser.
Yeah, no, fill me in. I'm not sure what
y'all can't see Aaron's face, but yeah. She is a bit younger than us, and so does not recognize that.
Yeah, this was 1993 or 94.
Dude, I was like 2 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even know what a computer was.
Yeah, so, and I mean, I'd already been programming a little bit at that point. I've been doing some stuff.
The first language I learned was QBasic.
Mine was GW Basic, which wasn't. I don't know what the actual difference is.
QBasic was pretty much a learning language. There was no build system for it. You compiled the code each time you ran it. Then Pascal and C++. So for me, starting with C# made sense because of where my background was. Like, when they tried to get me to do front-end stuff through those game things, it didn't... It was okay, but it just didn't really grab my interest.
Well, we thought that it would, so, I mean, that's why we sent you that way. And it seems like it... I mean, you got a job as a developer now, so
it probably worked out. It was when you guys got me into the C#, where you're like, your second round of, all right, why don't you try this? And I was hooked. So next, we've kind of discussed what got us into programming and a little bit about each of the ways that we learned. But I kind of want to go into a brief overview of getting a computer science degree, a coding boot camp, and then the autodidactic or self-taught learning. So, Will, let's start with you, the most established way
coming
in with the computer science degree.
So I got a lot of theory. I mean, I obviously had programming classes as well, but you know, we also had stuff like on how circuits were designed and how the CPU worked. So like all the CPU registers, you know, like I can debug assembler. I've done that in the last few weeks. I don't recommend it, but I can survive that at this point. And you also get a whole lot of math that mostly like... A substantial chunk of it was not particularly useful, and the math that was useful was not intended for the programmers. It was intended for the engineers. So we had a lot of theory. I would argue that a pretty good chunk of computer science, like the actual degree, is autodidactic. In other words, like the people that got out and were programmers when they got out and they were actually capable, they coded for fun. I know we did that. We pulled pranks all the time, and I got called into the network administrator's office because I flooded somebody's inbox, and I got read the Riot Act about the 1986 Computer Crime Act, and then they hired me a month later. But yeah, that was entertaining. But you know, it was a thing of like you get all the theory, but you still have to actually do the practice, because a degree doesn't give you the actual experience. You know, it's the theory and stuff. And I mean, it helps a ton, because I can look at something and go, okay, what's the growth rate on efficiency on this algorithm? Like,
I would think it's a lot like the people that really advance in programming are the ones that code when they get home, and that, you know, that do this as a hobby as well as, you know, what they do for work.
Yeah,
opposed to
dark matter developers.
Yeah,
I would argue that they don't even do that. Like when they were in college, like they had to work on it.
No, I'm saying like they're the ones the ones that only work. You know, they only code at work.
Yeah,
they're the ones that don't really. You know, they stay in the same position for 20 years.
Yeah,
don't advance.
And we had a few of those as well. We also had some. You know, I don't want to sound harsh to professors, but we had some professors that frankly couldn't code their way out of a wet paper bag. And it was not so much that they didn't know the theory. It's that when something didn't work, they didn't have enough experience to know what was wrong to actually be able to troubleshoot it. And then we had a few others that, you know, like we had a couple of guys that were physics professors, one who was a high energy physics, you know, like he did like all the nuclear something or other stuff that I didn't completely comprehend. That guy programmed for fun and he got into it that way. And so you could royally screw something up and you could go ask him and, you know, he would know what the deal was because he had just, you know, he'd had that experience at some point. And some of the guys that, you know, had, you know, comp sci doctorates couldn't, you know, it's like understanding physics and playing baseball. Like physics is what drives baseball to work, but it doesn't help you hit a ball.
I think one of the things that really brought me to programming was when I was coming over here, sitting down with you when you were working on stuff, you weren't like hiding the complex stuff from me. When you had to troubleshoot something, you walked me through that process. And I'm a big problem solver. I love, you know, like looking at something and not knowing what's wrong and trial and error to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the reason I did that with you, you know, and we got into this in the episode on apprenticeship was, well, partially because I like to watch you suffer. But beyond that, you know, like if you're getting into a real job, like that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And you need to know that going in, you know, like this rosy, oh, you're going to become a tech nerd in 6 weeks and then you're going to start a startup and you're going to be Mark Zuckerberg. Like that ain't a thing.
Yeah.
And you need to know that going in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exactly. I guess that's kind of a rough summary of my take on it with the comp sci degree. I mean, it was useful and the stuff I learned helps me out all the time, but the stuff I learned on my own, that actually made me valuable.
No, like I've bought some computer science textbooks just to read about the theory.
That's good. You don't need melatonin now.
See, the thing is, they don't put me to sleep.
Let me see if I can find. Oh, let me get my algorithms book. You don't even have to open it. It is powerful, son.
Actually, I may have given that away.
Yeah, you probably did.
Somebody else with sleep disorders, probably.
So, Aaron, how was a boot camp?
It was intense. It was an intense 6 months for sure. So NSS has two different programs. There's the full-time intensive. Mm-hmm. And so it's 6 months, 9 to 4. So that's 30 hours a week in class. And then you're going to spend at least probably 10, you know, 5 to 10, if not more than that per week, working on coding exercises and things at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like a full-time job, and that's how they told us to treat it was, you know, this is your job because it's going to help you get a job, you know, when you're finished with the program.
That's one of the things that really impresses me about NSS. They don't seem to be one of those fly-by-night computer schools. Like, they actually are training people that are capable when they get out.
Well, yeah.
And a lot of the schools don't. Like, when I was coming up, your option was ITT Tech, which just went under.
Yeah.
Like, if that ages, you know, that shows my age at all. Like, and so we have, you know, the older coders, a lot of us have got a somewhat negative impression of the coding boot camp type things that may not be accurate anymore. Mm-hmm. Because of what was going on when we were going through, like, especially before the dot-com bubble popped. Mm-hmm. In 2000, there was some ridiculous salaries and stuff. I mean, it was over the top.
Well, and boot camps generally are only a few years old. Like NSS, I think is one of the oldest, and they just celebrated their 4-year anniversary. So it's a new and emerging thing rather than going either being fully self-taught or, you know, going the computer science degree route.
Yeah. I actually looked at NSS and went and interviewed with them. They were impressed with the stuff that I'd already done learning here, but then the cost got me. Mm-hmm. Because I was going through a divorce and I just didn't have it.
The divorce was going through you.
Well, yeah. That's true.
Let's be honest here.
But one thing I liked about doing the autodidactic way was there was no enforced structure. Of course, had I not previously been in med school, I would have needed that enforced structure. Mm-hmm. But one thing about being an intelligent person is you don't have to study a lot. And it wasn't until I got to med school that I really had to learn how to study.
Yeah, I say that's fair. I mean, I didn't have to study very hard in high school.
Yeah.
And some of the comp sci classes towards the end, mm-hmm, were really the beginning of me having to study a lot and really push hard. No. And I mean, that's completely fair. Like,
I had to learn how to study in medical school.
Yeah, which was not really the place.
No. Well, a lot of people did because a lot of, you have to think, everyone in there is smart enough to get into med school. So you're in a room full of very intelligent people. And most of us never had to really study that hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the people that worked hard to get there. And they're the ones that do really well in med school because it is literally an overload of information. You have to be able to go through and pick, this is important, this is valuable, this can wait. It's all important information, but like, this is valuable, this is what I need. You gotta
get the right details.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it changes the way you look at taking in information.
But there was one cool thing about National Software School is that there wasn't, like, there was a curriculum, but there wasn't, it wasn't standard or traditional education. Like, it was a lot of, while there wasn't really studying per se, there was a lot of hands-on work. Like, we, you know, from day one, we're building applications, even if it was, like, you know, a simple HTML CSS page, you know, week one or two when we were starting out, or, mm-hmm. you know, our first C# project was a console app. Like, you know, we day one, we were hands-on learning, and like, that was really beneficial, because it was like, you know, you try something, you break it, and then you figure out why it was broken, you figure out, you know, how to fix it. Like, one of my classmates, he would break things 1,000 different ways, but until he found the right way to do it. But then he understood why it wasn't working, so when people in class came to him for help, like, you know, he didn't necessarily give them the answers, but, you know, he could help them where they were stuck, because, you know, he'd hit
all of the problems.
Yeah,
I was exactly. kind of that guy.
Yeah. And so there weren't traditional grades and that kind of thing. So it was, we had front end, we had, I want to say, like, 4 milestone quizzes, and it was kind of like, complete them at your own pace. There was usually some kind of due date, you know, when you were supposed to have them turned in, and then you would get feedback on, you know, here's what you did well, here's what you need to improve, you know, and just so that they could kind of gauge our progress. Those kind of fell off on the back end. I think we had one quiz, and it was on unit testing. But, I mean, it wasn't a traditional education, but all of the hands-on experience really helped. We had individual exercises as well as a multitude of group projects.
And, you know, well, I mean, half of it is being able to work with people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the folks that I went through with, that wasn't a thing. They were, you know, they had that late 90s, early 2000s ethos of the, you know, outcast programmer, you know, sitting in a basement, like, that was the thing that they were aspiring to. And yeah, it didn't go well. Like, it's much better to actually get real practice and actually do something.
And having all those experiences with the individual and group projects, we have a ton of commits and commit history on our GitHubs, and then we have actual projects that we can put out there for people to see not only the code behind it, but, like, a working, you know, application. They can see that we've built something, and we can do group work with other people, and so there it's basically a, you know, a portfolio that you have at the end to show potential employers or whoever.
Yeah, so I mean, that was one thing that actually impressed me about your resume. And of course, I got the LinkedIn contact from you and saw the resume, and then, like, you're hired somewhere, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess she's good. You know, it was like, because I was like, okay, well, I know people I can get this in front of and, you know, talk her up and, you know, get the ball rolling and try to help. It's like, nope, she got it.
It took me 49 days. I counted, and I was just like, and I think it felt like it was longer than
I think I got like 4 of those days out of, you know, like you contacted me at day 45.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you were like right before you got the job, and I was like, well, I guess she's set. Because, I mean, I know a bunch of recruiters.
Yeah, I do remember.
And, you know, I know a bunch of different people, and it's like, you know, I can kind of find things out a lot of times if somebody's looking for somebody, mm-hmm. you know, kind of help that along.
It must have been like, probably what happened was I was supposed to have my interview like that Friday before, and then ended up getting rescheduled to Wednesday. So I probably somewhere in between there was probably when I reached out to you.
Yeah, because I was like all frustrated. I was like, hey, here's somebody's got their stuff together very clearly. Like, you can show evidence. This is a junior developer that actually should have a job versus the, you know, I wrote Hello World in HTML, now give me $100,000 a year type people that we run into all the time. Like, we have to filter those, you know, out of interviews. And so I'm like, hey, you know, we can, like, help this person. It's like, no, she already got it. It's like, all right, well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. I was going to say one of the things, I guess, the similarities between the boot camp and then the way I learned was the project-based learning that you were talking about, because almost all of what I did once I got the basic syntax down was projects.
Yep.
And it started off with stuff that Will would be like, hey, work on this. And then it became, hey, I've got something that I don't really want to do because it's just kind of mundane for me, but it'll be good learning for you here. You figure this out.
Yeah. Sit at my house and drink my beer.
Yeah.
And rebuild my website for me, because I'm going to Vegas. That actually happened.
Yes. Like I said, and the projects became increasingly more difficult.
Yeah.
So, like, it started off with, redid some stuff in WordPress for you, and then a few months later, I redid the entire site for you.
Yeah.
Like, wrote the theme and everything for Hexo.
Yep.
And then built the podcast website. And
I was going to say, because like the project I gave him for the podcast website was basically like, okay, I've set up WordPress on here. It's ready to go. Here's all your access permissions. Go do the thing and we'll give it a couple weeks and then I'll go back and look and I'll be, you know, I can help you iron out things. And I look at it after a couple of weeks and I'm like poking around on there and I'm, you know, like initially I was like, oh, it won't be too bad if, you know, I can find some things, I can teach him some stuff. And then after a while I'm like getting frantic going, okay, there's nothing really wrong here. And, you know, like, I think I found like one little CSS thing that I was able to like, ah, ha, ha, I got it.
You know, I think like you brought that up and I was like, yeah, I meant to ask you about that.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I'll have a Coke then.
Yeah. Well, don't mean to burst your bubble, but
yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I was really looking forward to talking down to him and it, not really, but yeah, I mean, like I also took the phone calls where they're like, oh, well, you were an apprentice over there. And I kind of had to explain like how we set that up, which was that is really hard talking to HR people about. Cause they're like, well, is he an intern? It's like, no. Well, what was he doing there? Like, was he an employee? No, he was my friend that came over to my house while I was working from home. When I had problems, I was like, hey, let's debug through this so you can learn stuff.
So,
cause I'm going to be doing it anyway.
An apprentice.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, and granted, I was a little bit of a jerk on occasion. You know, I made things harder than they had to be, but you know, you learn from it. Huh. And I mean, I think that's kind of true of like the autodidactic approach that you had, is that you do kind of have to find somebody to help you along. I mean, and there were a couple, you know, even with, you know, CompSci, like there were people that were more senior that helped me along. You know, there's a guy down the hall that was a Linux hacker, like back when Linux was like when you compiled your own kernel and did all the things.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I recognize the word kernel.
And we're not talking about chicken.
No. Or kernel corn. Not that either.
I mean, and I've done that. I've the thing is like 15 years later, I actually, you know, did my own compile and did all the things that he was doing in college. But, you know, you pretty much have to find somebody like that that's gotten a little bit further along just so that you can get a little bit of help when you get stuck so you don't get frustrated.
I'm curious because Will talked about how he had classes on kind of the concepts like algorithms and design patterns and architectural structures and those things. What did you have from a code camp perspective?
We definitely didn't delve into a lot of the...
You didn't have to implement a bubble sort.
No.
It's fine. That's good. Because you never have to
theory,
do it again.
Theory. Yeah. We didn't delve into like theory and architecture and design. We did design patterns a little, but it was mostly like high level concepts, you know, and then we got an explanation about what, you know, what each of those things were and some of the theory behind it. But we definitely, with a 6-month boot camp, we definitely didn't delve too deep on anything. Because like in the beginning, it was a little slower, you know, with learning the concepts, like, you know, you spend, you know, a few days or a week or whatever on this thing. And then the next week it would be a new concept. Mm-hmm. And then you do a couple of projects or a group project. And so it worked like that. And then, well, toward the end of our front end, it was kind of slammed because snow days, we missed 4 days of school in the
with
January
the ice storm.
In January, February, we missed about 4 days of school. Over the course of 12 weeks, that adds up. Like, that's almost a whole week of you know, material or instruction time lost. And so toward the end, I think we got one less week on our capstone projects. And then when we did, I can't even remember what we did, but it was like Jasmine and Promises and, well, Jasmine's unit testing.
Yes.
And then, what did I just say, Jasmine?
Promises.
Oh, yeah, JavaScript Promises, which is, you know, like a way to avoid callback hell. And then and then Angular. So like Angular, we got like a day lecture on that.
Oh,
like
you got all that in a week?
Yeah, no, it was literally back to back to back.
I wouldn't try to do all that in a week.
Well, no, it was because we were crushed on time. We were short on time. And so it was, you know, here's what Jasmine testing is. You know, here's half a day, go play with it. And then the next day it was like, here's, you know, and I can't remember if it was exactly these things in a row, but it was literally three topics in a week. And I think we got 2 days on Angular 1.5. And then it was like, hey, go build your capstones using Angular. And we were like, was Angular, or not really, but it was a lot to absorb.
Yeah, because when I got Angular, I got about a 2-hour introduction to it, and they're like, and now write this thing.
See you later. That's kind of what happened.
But I didn't have all that other stuff right before it, and it was rough.
Yeah, but when you learned Angular, you'd been programming for...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You had a lot of experience, and you already had a lot of concepts that you had learned, so Angular was just learning syntax and their way of thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, and another fun point, in addition to having just been exposed to Angular and then sent off to write our capstones, we were using Firebase as our backend because we hadn't yet gotten to databases and what backend was or anything. And so not having any previous exposure or understanding of what backend was and how databases and tables and everything work together, I had a heck of a time trying to understand how everything in Firebase related to one another, which made a ton of sense later once I understood how relational databases and tables work together. But like my front end was a headache and a half just trying to figure out how everything was connected in those tables.
Yeah, and I think that was one thing I was lucky in the comp sci degree is I had a database professor who was absolutely brutal.
Yeah, but she's such a nice lady.
She is nice. But I got a C in that class. And it's the C I am the most proud of that grade out of anything I've done.
I believe it. I mean, I could see her being that difficult.
But you know, that is I've never had a problem with databases since then.
Yeah. Something that I'm kind of noticing is from my perspective, the self-taught, I pulled what I needed to do. So if I needed to learn a concept to build something, or if what I was building led me to, oh, there's this concept that relates to this, let me go learn more about it and deepen my knowledge, that's the way I worked. But from what I'm noticing about what both of you are saying is, it seems to me that the computer science degree is heavier on theory.
Yep.
And concepts and things like that. Whereas when it comes to the practicalities of coding, you're expected to learn a lot of that on your own. With the boot camp, it seems that is more focused on the practicalities of the coding. This is what you need to go out there and work. And the concepts, the algorithms, the patterns, that's what you're expected to go out and learn on your own.
I would agree with that to an extent. I mean, for us, my cohort, the front end and the back end were structured very differently. The front end was a lot better developed, and the curriculum was more solidly in place, I believe mostly because every cohort gets it. Like the front end is the same for every cohort. Every cohort learns HTML, CSS, JavaScript, jQuery, Angular 1.5, unit testing of some sort. So it's a lot of those basics in the front end, whereas the back end for each class, at least at NSS, rotates. So they don't want to do two cohorts back to back, having learned the same back end, because they don't want to flood the market. I mean, they want all of us to get jobs. And so my cohort was originally supposed to learn Node, but the cohort before us was supposed to learn Ruby, but then something happened with their instructor that they were supposed to have, and so therefore they didn't have a Ruby instructor anymore, so they ended up learning Node, which then ended up, like the domino effect, kind of, we ended up learning C# and .NET. And so I believe we were like the fourth cohort going through to learn C#.NET, but and there was a lot of infrastructure things going on at the same time. Like they were trying to bring on and start more cohorts concurrently than just two. Like they were trying to start one every month and a half versus every 3 months. And so and they were kind of short staffed at the time, so the TAs and the instructors were being spread a little thin. So the back end was not as well structured as the front end. We did dive into concepts and theory and design patterns and things like that a little bit upon mostly like the lectures, because most of the time it wouldn't be so much a lecture as we call it live coding, where hey, here's what we're gonna learn, here's high level summary of it, here let me show you something. And so we would kind of contribute as a class and watch the lead instructor do his thing up there, showing us what it was, and then, have us participate to try and make sure everybody was understanding. So we didn't dive quite as deep as you probably would in a computer science degree, but there was still some of that in addition to the hands-on coding learning style.
We kind of had a problem in ours where the teachers would tell us, okay, here's the program you're going to write. And then they would start working on it and like showing us on the board. And we were finally like, hey, no spoilers. Give us one night to write the code and then show us if that's what you're going to do. And like we kind of, several of us pushed back on that and they actually changed it. Because otherwise we were like watching somebody type for an hour. And then you go home and you got to do the same thing that they just did.
Yeah.
And you're bored the whole time.
Yeah. And ours was a little different was that, so he would get up there and type. And sometimes he'd show us stuff. And sometimes he would be like, so what should I write next? And then he would stay silent up there until we told him what to write. And sometimes it would be right. Sometimes it wouldn't. But it was a class collective or a class collectively trying to, you know, write this program together and like help each other understand what it was that was going on.
Yeah, I'm glad they changed that. Like ours, you know, of course, this was far enough back too that, how can I put this? We didn't have computer connected projectors. And so like you had like the clear plastic things that they wrote on.
Oh, transparencies.
Yes.
I do know what those are.
And yeah, it is like looking back on it now, it's like, how did we ever even learn to do this?
Well, tell us about finding your first job coming out with a degree in computer science.
Well, okay. So freshman year, I got in trouble for flooding somebody's email account that irritated me. I mean, it was just really a prank. And then they hired me there like a month later because the network administrator's idea was, it's like, hey, you know, the people that do this kind of stuff, we want them on our team so that they think the network is theirs, so they protect it. Versus like constantly trying to break into it. Like it was just like a low effort thing. And he's like, we can kind of cultivate them.
Yeah. When I met you, you were working there.
Yeah. And then I guess it was like a year later, he had a friend from church that wanted some help with a real estate program and it was part-time work. And so I got to go over there and debug a lot of ActiveX stuff and a lot of DDE stuff. I mean, it was old stuff. And then other friends in college or other friends while I was in college who were already well out and established kind of helped them with some stuff too, because they realized it's like, hey, here's a junior developer that just doesn't quit. And it's like, I can buy this guy a pizza and just like turn him loose and I don't have to do anything. And I had one or two friends like that. Like coming out of college, I was doing Kung Fu at the time. And so the guy that hired me for the first job had literally sparred with me the day before and I busted his nose. And you talk about like going into an interview, like massively confident. It's like, I have busted the CEO's nose yesterday. And it was totally fine. I mean, like he was cool. Like he did Kung Fu and it's just like that happens. It wasn't a, you know, we were fighting. It was his block didn't quite get there in time and it was bare knuckle. Stuff happens.
I remember I did martial arts with you.
I don't think I had
the bruises.
Like, I don't think that I had quite a typical experience probably. Yeah. Cause this, you know, this friend, started, you know, he borrowed some money from his dad, built a company, sold it right before the .com boom, you know, and he knew me well. So like I had the social network and I think that's really important for, people going through these other programs to develop, but that's something that the program that I was in didn't really push either.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys have heard about my story because we started the podcast before I had a job. So you've heard as I've gone along, you know, what it's been like, but I would say it was a little bit harder looking for a job and finding someone willing to take in a junior developer that didn't have a degree or didn't have any formal training.
Yeah. And you also had I had a little bit of an advantage because when I came out, the .com bubble had burst. And so they were getting rid of the senior developers that were really, really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also the shift to .NET. And so I came in right on the cusp of that. Like I started with the first beta.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it goes live and then like I get a job, like, you know, when it's been out a month and they're wanting to convert. And nice. So I hit right on the point where I needed to be. And I did my senior project at VB.net.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had an advantage that other people didn't. So,
yeah, that makes perfect sense. Aaron, I know we've talked a little bit about it already, but what was your experience kind of finding a job? You said it took 49 days?
49 days counting the day after demo day, including weekends.
Okay.
From the time we finished demo day to the time that I actually accepted the offer.
And so what was your experience like going to interviews? Like with me, I'm going out to places where I don't know anybody there, coming in with no formal training. So I had to kind of get over that hurdle. And I feel like coming from the self-taught, you have to really show, I really do know this stuff. I'm not just saying I know it. How was that for you coming from a boot camp?
I feel like it was actually very similar to what you came across, was that it was actually really more difficult than I expected to initially break into the field, mm-hmm. being on that air quote junior status, in that, you know, I mean, you had about a year of self-teaching apprenticeship experience, and I came out of a 6-month boot camp worth of experience, and then, you know, like 8 months before that of being self-taught. But it was more difficult than I thought it was going to be. While I was in the boot camp, they told us they would, the second half, they would bring in people and different companies to talk to us about their interview process, you know, what kind of questions they ask, what do they look for in juniors, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And a lot of what we kept hearing was that they mostly hire for culture fit and personality. A lot of what people say is that you can teach somebody the skills that they need. You can't really teach personality or mindset. Like, if you could be the smartest person, you know, or have the most experience on the team, but if you don't know how to interact with people in general or your teammates, nobody's going to want to work with you. It seemed to be going really strong right after demo day, because they brought employers in for us to talk to and to view our projects and that kind of thing. And so I think I got, I want to say, at least a couple of interviews out of that. But then it was a hard shift too, because we went from being a really like tight-knit class to where like we wanted to help each other out and you know, wanted the best for each other, to we turned around after demo day and a lot of us were competing for the same positions. Like there was one company that interviewed 7 of us from NSS, and they were only considering NSS grads. And so, and of course we all found out about it because, you know, we were all still talking and like, you know, hey, how's your job search going and that kind of thing. And there were 7 of us competing for these 2 positions that this company had open. And so that was hard, because it's like, while I'm wishing everyone that I was in class with well, you know, I hope everyone else gets a job, but it's like, you know, I need a job too. And so that was a really hard shift coming out of the boot camp. But and there would be some weeks that I had, you know, 2 or 3 interviews with different companies, and then there would be, you know, a week or two that would go by and I would hardly even have any phone conversations with anybody. So it was really up in the air. And then it was also partially timing, because apparently the summer months are actually the hardest months to get interviews and that kind of thing in, because, you know, everybody's on vacation or like part of the team's on vacation, and then, you know, that person comes back and then somebody else goes on vacation, and so the summer is a really difficult time to get hired.
I say people don't like to leave jobs during the summer.
No.
Because they take their vacations then, and so they want to use up all their vacation time before they leave.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's that, and it's also the hiring thing. It's also your kids are out of school, and so you don't want to be dealing with that particular stress and have a house full of kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed to be going a lot slower than I guess it actually was, because I guess the average for landing a job after the boot camp was about 3 months. But when you're broke,
it kind of seems like real long longer. When you're broke. Yep.
I understand.
And so I would interview with people, or I would be talking to people, and they'd be like, well, hey, you're really cool, we like you, but you just don't have quite enough experience for what we need right now. Mm-hmm. So it was really actually difficult finding places that were open to hiring juniors. And then the ones that were flooded with candidates, because we were all looking for jobs.
Well, and like getting somebody, you know, the thing is, like with a junior developer, the biggest thing you want to hire is somebody that can take the mundane tasks off the senior developers so they can work on the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like in a corporate type environment, it's, you know, partially you're training them, but also, you know, there's a lot of things that senior developers really don't want to mess with. And a junior developer can come in there and help. I mean, we've got a guy that's a little bit junior to me, and I throw stuff his way a lot.
The other thing you run into is the company across the street from where you work,
right,
that I interviewed at. I went and interviewed there. I was the very first junior dev they interviewed. I just hit it off. Like, I walked in, one of the owners met me at the door, and before we were even in the interview room, we were laughing and joking, because we just had...
You remember telling me about this? Yeah.
We had similar personalities, and then I meet the dev team, and they gave me a test. Some of the questions on there, I'm like, Like, I just don't know. So I wrote on the test, I could look this up with my phone, but my sense of ethics is too strong, so I'll look it up when I get home. Because I'm like, all right, they're just wanting something on here. And if they read it, they'll get a laugh and they'll be like, all right, at least he's honest with us that he doesn't know this. And so the two senior devs come in. Like, they were reading and asking me about my answers. And the one that had that page, he gets to it and he's just like, oh, you got to look at this. And he hands it to the other guy. He's like, read it to me. He's like, no, you got to read this yourself. And he reads it. And I'm like, the part about my phone. And they're like, yep. And that's when the one of the senior devs was like, yeah, I didn't know that answer. He's like, that was his question. I don't know where he got that. I had to look it up myself.
Well, we have, you know, I mean, I've been on quite a few deals where we've interviewed people, and that's a big thing, is getting them to the point where they say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that happened to me, you know, where I'm working now, because he who shall not be named, you know, because we've known each other for 15 years, you know, like I go in and I sit down and he goes and sits right across from me and I'm like, oh no. And, you know, because it's like, because you know, it's a friend of yours and like they're not going to cut you any slack because they know that like that's a respect thing. You know, they're not going to try to, you know, make it easy. And he didn't. And then the senior developer didn't either. And then I, you know, made enough of an impression that I got into the CEO's office. And then he's like, oh, you're a biology major. So we started talking biochem. And, I'm rusty on that.
I know that's something that they told us at NSS, you know, when interviewing. And, like, you know, I don't know is a perfectly acceptable answer. And while we understood that, like I have no problem saying I don't know something, you know, but some strategies they gave us, it's like, well, I don't know what that is, but could you tell me about it, you know, or you know, make an educated guess, you know, like, I'm not quite sure what that is. Here's what I think it might be. Or, you know, just they gave us some strategies for circumventing that in a way. But it got to a point in some of my interviews, or the interviews that I was in, was that it feels like you can only, like, you only, it was almost like a game show, like you only had so many I don't knows that you could use before they started questioning, well, what do you know? And so that was actually a really frustrating feeling, because it was like, you know, I don't have a problem admitting I don't know something, but that I want to learn more. But it's like, you know, you can only use so many. Like, if you use, you know, if you answer half the questions, I don't know, like, they're going to start questioning, well, what do you know? And are you really qualified to do this job?
Yes.
That's an interesting, that's the reason that I ended up learning Angular.
You get tired of being asked about it.
Well, yeah, what happened was I told a recruiter, and not one that's been on this show or the one that we use, but I told a recruiter that I was interested in learning Angular. You know, because she asked me all sorts of questions and, you know, what I was learning, what I knew and things like that. And I said, you know, one thing that I'm interested in learning is Angular because I hear it's really popular. She put on my resume that I knew Angular. So I start going to interviews, and somehow that resume got out, and everywhere I went, people were asking me Angular questions. And I had to tell them, like, look, I told the recruiter I was interested in learning Angular. I'm very early on in learning about it, so I don't know a whole lot. But that galvanized me to go, all right, everybody wants Angular. I better know this. Mm-hmm. Well, that pretty much wraps us up. But before we close everything out, Aaron is actually stealing the thunder from Will for Tricks of the Trade. So, Aaron, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
It came up when you were talking about, like, oh, you know, I need to learn this. And then another concept comes up, oh, I need to learn that. And that led me to thinking about how developers always have, you know, at least a couple of, like, Chrome or browser windows open, and you got, like, a bajillion tabs open, you know, like 20 tabs open on each one. There is a Google Chrome extension that I was introduced to while I was at NSS, and it has been a lifesaver. It's called OneTab. Basically, what it does is, you know, you have like 20 tabs open, and say you need to like restart your computer because it needs an update. It essentially bookmarks every tab that you have open, but without you needing to bookmark them individually. Like, it'll send them to a its own tab group. It's organized by date, so it's like everything that you have there. And then if you close Chrome, the next time you turn your computer back on and restart Chrome, all your tabs are there. Anyway, it was a total lifesaver.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.